Good morning, everybody, and thank you for attending this session on nutrition labeling in chain restaurants. So the way we're going to organize our session this morning is first start off with an overview across all the sites that we will be reporting on, and then each site will report on the findings specific to its site. What we'll do is we'll try to save 15 minutes at the end for discussion, questions, and answers, so we won't do questions after each presentation unless there's a really burning question just to clarify some of the information that was presented. So let me also tell you who our all-star lineup is today at the start here. So we're going to first be hearing from Mighty Bowles. And Mighty is with the Multnomah. She's the program design She's a senior research scientist for program design and evaluation services at the Multnomah County Health Department, which is based in Portland, Oregon. And she's worked in health research and evaluation for 20 years now, so she brings lots of experience. And she's focused on environmental strategies to improve nutrition and physical activity and chronic disease prevention. So she'll be reporting on some results from the Portland Multnomah area. Then we'll have Nadine Chan from Seattle and King County. And Nadine is the Assistant Chief of the Assessment, Policy Development, and Evaluation Section at Public Health Seattle and King County. And she will be presenting on the findings from that part of the world. Then we'll switch back to the other side of the country. And Tamara Dumanovsky will talk to us. She represents the work in New York City. She joined the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene as a research scientist back in 2001. And has been working evaluating programs in this arena in chronic disease prevention since then, and she's currently director of research and program evaluation for the New York City Department of Health in chronic diseases. And then finally, we'll take another detour down to Philadelphia, and there Brian Elbel from the NYU School of Medicine and the NYU Wagner School of Public Health will be presenting on some of his work in Philadelphia. He's an assistant professor of medicine and studies consumer and patient decision making as it relates to health and healthcare, and actually brings a behavioral economics approach to his work. So we'll hear from multiple parts of the country, from multiple disciplines, and it should be quite interesting. Jim Krieger, Chief of Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention at Public Health Seattle and King County, and also working with Nadine as a colleague on the evaluation of our menu labeling in Seattle and King County. So I have no relevant disclosures to make, unfortunately, I guess. I'd like to acknowledge folks who've contributed data to the summary that I'll be making, including Courtney Abrams from NYU, Mighty, Nadine, Tamara, Brian, and also Maiduk from our health department, as well as funding support from healthy eating research from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So what I'll do is briefly summarize the rationale for nutrition labeling, the current state of nutrition labeling, and then talk a little bit about what the local policies that we'll be hearing about today are that are being evaluated, as well as a new federal policy, and general discussion of the approaches that each side has taken to the evaluation, and summarize with what, at least I sense, where the state of the field is as of today. So the rationale for nutrition labeling at restaurants is probably obvious to most people in this room. Obesity is a major public health issue. Many more people are eating food out of the home. One-third of all calorie consumption now takes place out of the home. And the amount of money that people are spending on out-of-home food has been increasing dramatically over the last several decades. And often the food that you get when you eat out of home is energy dense and of lower nutrient value than what you might eat elsewhere. Also, customers are not very savvy about guessing how much calories and other nutrition content is in the food that they eat when they eat out, and most actually tend to be optimistic and underestimate the amount of calories in what they're ordering. We also know that prior to nutrition labeling regulations, nutrition information was not easily available to customers at the point of purchase, which is where it would be most likely, if it were to have an effect on their purchasing behavior, to be influential. So that made a pretty good logic model and logic case for why nutrition labeling should be tried. Now, it's important to know that as these nutrition label initiatives were implemented across the country, we had no real solid empirical evidence in restaurant settings that would actually work. So we all were embarking on a sort of uncharted territory to see what would happen. We had some data from cafeterias and work sites and schools that this approach might work, but we really were taking a step to see if this would be an effective strategy. because of the logic, the compelling logic behind this approach, and because of the saliency of the obesity issue, menu labeling rapidly accelerated. This is a chart based on data from Center for Science and the Public Interest of the number of menu labeling initiatives that were both proposed and passed over the last 4 years. And you can see that 2008 and 2009, there was a dramatic increase in activity. And this is a map, again, from CSPI, showing the current status nutrition labeling in about 23 states and localities around the country, four of whom have actually implemented regulations in King County, Seattle, in Westchester County, New York, in New York City, and in Philadelphia. What happened with all this flurry of activity is this led to federal action. The National Restaurant Association decided they couldn't deal with a plethora of local and state inconsistent sets of regulations. And so while the National Restaurant Association had historically resisted this nutrition labeling at chain restaurants and fast food restaurants, the pressure of what was happening at the local and state level forced their hand into negotiations, which resulted in passage of federal nutrition labeling standards as part of the Affordable Care Act. So the federal standards, which are due to go into effect in March of 2011, affect chains with more than 20 sites across the nation, including multiple venues such as drive-through, self-service, and importantly, vending machines. The information must be on menu boards, menus if they're not menu boards, and food tags. Requires presentation of calorie information and also a recommended statement about the recommended daily caloric intake for an average person, which has some problems we'll probably get into in the discussion section, and also notification that other information about other nutrients such as saturated fat, sodium, fiber, sugars, etc., would be available in writing on the premises. What's critical about this from the Restaurant Association's perspective is that this preempts all existing state and local regulations. So they did succeed in their goal of uniformity. However, the regulations that were passed at the federal level are fairly comprehensive and in many ways reflect what was happening in many of the state and local settings. The group that's responsible for issuing these regulations is the FDA. They've already issued several advisories in the direction that they're heading. They're going to be issuing a final guidance in December of this year and then have a final set of comment periods and then issue the proposed regulations as required by the Affordable Care Act 1 year after passage of the act, which will be in March. So to look at what we're going to be looking at today in the four locations locally, this just charts an overview of what kind of regulations were in effect prior to passage of the federal action. Now all these sites will have to harmonize their regulations with the federal regulations when they're finally implemented. So in terms of the location of where the caloric information and other nutrition information is posted, every place that we're going to talk about requires it on the menu or the menu board. Two of the sites, King County and Philadelphia, offer alternative places like pamphlets, posters that all must be at the point of purchase. In terms of whether food tags, meaning the little tags on foods in display cases or in self-service kind of venues, all sites except King County require the calorie information on the food tags. The sites are fairly consistent in having additional information on sodium, saturated fats, and carbohydrates. Half of them require a calorie statement about how many calories the average person should consume in a day. Most of them cover drive-throughs, and they went into effect in various time periods, New York City being the first in May of 2008, King County being the second in the nation in January of 2009, and Philadelphia coming on board in early 2010. Here's what menu boards look like in various settings. And so you can see, for example, at Starbucks, right next to the price is what the calorie information is. So if you get a Java chip, Venti, it's 600 calories. Here's what it looks like for a quarter pounder. And here's where your calorie information from Subway is right over here. In terms of the evaluation approaches that each of the sites adopted, there was actually a fair amount of coordination and collaboration with many of the investigators, hopefully to allow us to pool data and to allow for some consistency in reporting across sites. Most of the designs were pre-post studies, so basically quasi-experimental studies taking advantage of a natural experiment. All of them focused on adult purchasing behaviors. King County Multnomah also tried to capture information about children. Baseline data was collected, prior to implementation of the proposed initiatives, and follow-up data was collected at varying time periods after the regulations went into effect, ranging from several months to up to a year after or more. Each site provided a varying number of restaurants that they sampled, ranging from 20 in Philadelphia to 275 restaurants in New York City, and the number of customers who were surveyed at each site to collect data on whether they saw the nutrition information, whether they used it, and actually collecting information from them about what they purchased to allow computation of calories purchased as well. So the sample sizes average about 2,500 per wave of data collection at each site, although New York City had a much larger sample size. There were besides point of purchase intercept surveys, which all the sites used, several of the sites implemented additional complementary evaluation methods as well. Many of the sites are conducting menu audits and then trying to answer the second question. Besides changing calorie purchasing behavior of consumers, a second major policy objective of menu labeling is to see, does public disclosure of caloric information induce the chains to change the menu items to healthier menu items? So many of the sites will be looking at that. Those data will not be reported today because those are still in analysis. Environmental audits look to see, did menu labeling change the way items are promoted and displayed in restaurants? So what happened in the actual environment of restaurants? Qualitative evaluations sought to both describe the process of implementing menu labeling ordinances, as well as interview folks from groups who might not be adequately represented in more quantitative survey-based methodologies, such as youth or, someone must have hit the wall there. There we go, thank you. Are you all awake still? That was just a wake-up call. So to get the perceptions of customers of these stores about their views of how menu labeling was working, several of the sites use existing survey methodologies, such as the behavioral risk factor surveillance system or other random digit dial survey methods to collect additional information. And in King County, we were able to access sales data from chains to actually look at what their data systems said where they were selling. So just as a high-level summary, what we found across New York, King County, and Multnomah is that, to set this up, New York City and King County implemented their menu labeling regulations. Multnomah was preempted from implementing theirs, so they did a double baseline, two pre-measures, basically, of consumer behaviors and awareness. So we found in New York and in King counties, prior to implementation of nutritional labeling, and similarly for Multnomah, about 10 to 13% of consumers said that they were aware of the nutrition content and were able to find nutrition information about the products that they were purchasing. After implementation, upwards of 50 to 56% of consumers were aware that nutrition information was available on site. So a significant increase in awareness. Of those who were aware, we then wanted to find out, okay, if you're aware of it, were you actually using the information to influence your choice of what you were purchasing at that particular visit to the restaurant? So among all respondents, this is not just among the aware, the denominator here of this slide is all users, all people participating in the survey at the restaurants. Before, only about 3% or so of customers were actually using information to decide what they were purchasing. That went up to about 15 to 16% of customers after the information was posted of all users of these fast food restaurants. So, not everybody clearly, but a large proportion of the users were using this information. However, did using the information change the amount of calories they made at that particular purchase at that restaurant? And the answer seems to be like, not really. So we're having a disconnect between what the receipts they gave us show that they purchased in terms of then computing the caloric value of that and what they said they were doing. So that raises an interesting question about what the disconnect is about, and also raises the question about, does menu labeling really have an impact on the calories actually purchased? And I think we'll get some more insight into that from the next four presentations, so I'm going to leave you hanging a little bit at the edge there. There have been some additional studies besides those that are going to be presented today, and by this I mean real-world studies in real restaurants, not experimental studies in artificial situations. And most of these studies have found that, in general, awareness and use of the information increased, but that calories did not change, or if they changed, the amount of change was relatively small. In a single chain, Subway, in New York City, we saw reports of 52-calorie decrease. As Brian has found in some of his work in New York City, calories did not decrease when comparing Newark to New York City, which Newark did not have a regulation. In a voluntary sit-down restaurant study with only a very small sample in Tacoma, overall, calories didn't decrease, but in 4 out of 6 of the restaurants, they did decrease. In a large study using Starbucks data nationally, a 6% decrease in calories came, but interestingly, only from food items and not from the drinks. And then, as I mentioned, unpublished yet from Seattle, calories in one chain did not decrease. And in a chain of the study of the 17 largest chains in New York, calories were not assessed, so we don't have data on that particular chain. So that's kind of the summary of the literature, plus what you're going to hear now, which is hot off the presses, about how effective menu labeling is. So to summarize what I think we know, awareness and use increase substantially when you post nutrition information. We also know that posting it on boards rather than having pamphlets or brochures is much more effective in increasing awareness. There is a small impact, if any, on calories. There might be a greater impact in subgroups, such as folks who are obese, so folks who are more health conscious, folks with chronic conditions, but we don't know this for sure. The effect on total calorie intake is unknown. So it is hypothetically possible that if somebody knows how many calories they took in at the fast food restaurant, they could compensate when they go home by eating less. Probably unlikely, but it is possible. And we also don't know what the impact is yet in a quantitative way on the offerings that the restaurants have. Are they offering more low-calorie options? Is the average of the calories of all their product lines changing? We have anecdotal evidence that this is the case, but we need to analyze the data further to make a conclusion on that. Another potential benefit of the calorie and menu labeling in general is that it contributes to part of a broader movement for social norms change around eating behaviors, eating choices, and what constitutes the notion of healthy foods. But the bottom line is that there's not going to be a single intervention, as we know, that's going to affect a complex behavior such as eating or a complex problem such as obesity. And this was never intended to be the silver bullet that's going to solve the problem. The other thing what we need to know about a little bit more to possibly might make menu labeling a little more effective is that consumers may prefer calorie information presentation to other, in different formats. We don't really know the exact format yet, and this is actually an important question because the FDA is about to issue national guidelines, and yet there's very limited knowledge of what works best for consumers in terms of health literacy, numeracy, what the best way to process and provide information to make it most effective. It's not even clear what the best way is to provide caloric information about total daily calories, and if people even know in general what a calorie is. So we have a big knowledge gap that might be affecting the effectiveness of these kind of interventions. So I think what I'd end on in concluding is that this was a bold endeavor to try a new and untested strategy. It seems to be having potentially some benefits, but the intended benefit is not the one that was most hoped for, which is decrease in caloric intake. But as we try to tackle the complex problem of obesity, we need to continue to be innovative, bold, risk, taking on strategies that might work or might not work, so that we can figure out what the suite of strategies are that are going to help us affect this important public health problem.